Anyway, so once we relax, we can start this morning's, this afternoon's, evening's Dharma talk, no matter where you are in the world, because these talks are listened to in so many different countries that some places it is the morning and the afternoon and the evening, whatever. That was, I think I was saying that coming back from UK, I was mentioning this to a group from the Nantian Temple who came today to point out all the wonderful things they're doing with the Nantian Buddhist Institute over in Wollongong. It's just people want to do courses in Buddhism at university level. They can sponsor, do all sorts of wonderful things over there. But just talking about how to, that's over in Wollongong. It's from Taiwanese tradition, but I was talking today about what's the difference between the different Buddhist traditions. And my answer is nothing. Sometimes I say the different cake, the same cake with different icing. Mine is milky chocolate. The Tibetans are strawberry. Zen is vanilla. The icing on the outside, the different robes we wear, but underneath, it's still the same type of Buddhism. But today I wanted to sort of talk more on the subject of blame. Because now I see, looking at news sites, that people always tend to blame other people. It's other people's fault. And other people need to be held to account. And some of that negativity of always blaming others tends to miss an important point. One of the things, if you blame others and want them to change, it's a lot of effort. And sometimes they would be unable to change. So sometimes that people start, even this time of year, blaming me. You know why they blame me this time of year? Because many people, before they did their exams, they came to me to ask for some chanting and some holy water. And you know what happened? They didn't pass their exams. And so they blame me. It's my fault. This actually happened some years ago. This Malaysian girl, that she came to me to do some chanting. She was doing her, I forget, first, second, third year university exams or whatever it was. And she said, can you do some chanting? I got my exams next week. So I chanted, really give everything I've got for exams. And afterwards, she never came back. I never saw her again. But some of her friends came and told me, said, she's going around telling all of her friends, Ajahn Brahm is a bad monk. Ajahn Brahm is no good. Don't go to that temple ever again. You know why? Because she failed. And she blamed me for that. And all of her friends said, look, Ajahn Brahm, I know they're blaming you. You've got nothing wrong with you at all. You're a good monk. It's just that she was her first year away from her parents in Malaysia. And that when she came here, she was like free. And so she spent the first year just going to parties, chasing boys or letting boys chase her, I'm not quite sure which. But anyway, that she was just a party girl having a great time. And she thought when it came time for examinations and tests, that Ajahn Brahm will look after that part of her student life. And of course you can't do that, you know. You can help a little bit, encourage people, but at least you need to do some homework and studies yourself. And so that just reminded me how easy it is to blame somebody else. And if especially we have the one of Ajahn Chah's stories. I was just thinking of this as I was coming in here. And one of his stories is very rarely I say this story because it's so simple, but I use this a lot in my own personal life, about a man who was walking through the forest and he saw a hole dug in the forest. And at the bottom of the hole was a great treasure. And he reached down to try and get that treasure, that gold. And he stretched and stretched and stretched, but he couldn't reach the gold. So he just gave up. And as he walked away, he saw another fellow and he said, "Oh, there's a hole down there. If you pass it, forget about it. There's a lot of gold down there, but it's too deep." And the man he met got to that hole. "What are you talking about? It's too deep." The problem was not the hole was too deep, but his hand was too short. So he extended his hand by getting a stick with a hook on, and he could hook all the treasure out. And how often is it in life? It's not the hole is too deep, but our arm is too short. A different way of looking at it. It's not the exam is too hard, but maybe that we're not using our intelligence in such a way to actually to see other ways of dealing with that problem. And this was something which I always recalled in my life. There's never a problem which is too difficult. It's just my mind, my intelligence, my innovation has yet to find a way to solve it. The hole is never too deep, but our arms are sometimes too short. It's a very positive way of looking at life, because when we spend too much time being negative and blaming, it's her fault, it's his fault, it's the government's fault, it's Ajahn Brahm's fault, it's God's fault, it's life's fault, it's somebody's fault. How often, when we're blaming others, that we are not really being active and actually doing something much more positive? It's the old, rather light a candle than complain about darkness. Rather turn on the aircon than complain about the heat. Rather just take off your blanket than complain. There's always something which I found you can do no matter what happens in life. But sometimes people get such a negative attitude in life, they think, no, it's impossible. And when it's impossible, then you go and blame somebody else, or you blame yourself, you blame somebody. And that sort of blame game is something which I think is just not being proactive in life. There was Venerable Chanda, who's probably listening, over in UK. She sent an email today with a lovely little quote, an old Chinese proverb. I don't know why they call it old Chinese proverbs, as if the only wisdom was in China. But anyway, you know the old Chinese proverbs. And this one was saying that a person who thinks it can't be done should not disturb a person actually doing it. Which I thought was very wise. Often we say, it can't be done, it can't be done, it can't be done. But there's other people actually doing it and finding solutions to some of the big problems in life. So never think it can't be done. At least if you do, don't interrupt people actually doing it and solving those problems of life. Because again, that negativity, that blaming, does not help at all. So often in life, whenever there's any problem, we just learn how to do it and learn how to extend our arm, learn how to do those extra studies, learn how to somehow or other find problems instead of blaming. Because it's just too easy, and unfortunately our culture encourages blame. I think maybe from the old Christian culture of the original, you know, they call it original sin, blaming. Who was it? Blaming Eve or Adam or something?
Both of them.
Both of them, okay, that's fair. But they never blamed the snake. I thought it was the snake's fault for trying to convince someone to take an apple. But as my old friend, he's passed away now, Dr. Kesari Dharmananda used to say, if that story of original sin, I think, what was it? a snake giving Eve an apple and telling her to give it to Adam to bite it or something. I'm not quite sure exactly what the story was. But anyway, he was just saying, if that happened in Asia, then it would have been no problem at all. Adam would not have eaten the apple. He'd have eaten the snake. It's Asian culture. Especially in Vietnam. I don't know if it's especially in Vietnam. China. But anyway, why blame anybody? Because, you know, sometimes that we do have a choice. Often, like, people really try and blame me for all sorts of things. Ajahn Brahm, even when I first came here, many years ago, 36 years ago, sometimes you walk on the street on arms round and people will blame you. They say, why did you get a proper job? Well, you know, I thought this was a proper job. Maybe they meant a job which actually paid something instead of being exploited. But I don't get paid in money, but I certainly get paid in a lot of job fulfillment. So it's all those wonderful people who come around from the world and just say, you've changed their lives, you've helped them, which is a wonderful thing to be able to tell. I get paid in just my good karma and the joy, the job satisfaction which I get. And what about your jobs? What you do? Do you get job satisfaction in your job? Sometimes we always think that we want other people to satisfy us. But I remember just this wonderful little saying from the fellow who was the CEO of the Changi Airport Group or something. And it was just a day before he was doing the grand opening of the new Terminal 4 in Singapore. And I was co-presenting at a conference with him in Singapore. And he was saying that how many people complain about work culture, but how many people go to work every day with the intention to make one person happy, make a person smile, not just expect that someone will make you smile, but that you go out of your way to help somebody else smile at work. In other words, you be, instead of blaming the culture, doing something to improve the culture. There's all sorts of amazing ways which I know that people have told me in the past how they can improve the culture in so many different places. Even in local government, in councils. Because this gentleman told me this story that I think he was a partner of a Thai girl and told me that he had a car repair shop over in, I think, in Vincent Street or somewhere. And one morning he went to work on Monday morning and he found that someone had parked their car across his entrance. So he couldn't get into his workshop. And all the vehicles which had just almost been ready to collect, they couldn't get out. And the car was parked right across his workshop. So he rang up the local council and the ranger, and the ranger came round and put a sticker on it. He said, aren't you going to move it? He said, no. The process is, the bylaws are, we put a sticker on it, and if it's not moved after 7 days, then we can tow it away. 7 days, that's my work! He says, oh, that's the law, we can't move it. It's our bylaw, 7 days. So instead of complaining and blaming, this gentleman decided to do something different, to rather light a candle than complain about darkness. It's not the hole is too small, it's your the hole is too deep, it's just your arm is too small. So he got his car and he drove to the council offices and he parked his car across the driveway of the councillor's car park. So none of the councillors could get in, none of them could get out. They told him, they came out and said, move your car. He said, no, put a sticker on it.
But of course, both cars were moved within about 10 or 15 minutes. So I kind of like that story because it's like a nice way, instead of blaming and just complaining and writing letters and just actually doing something about it and just thinking a little bit about outside the box to actually to change the problem. Because even sometimes when we do complain, like, I don't know how many people, they just don't just complain about their studies. Sometimes they complain about their partner. I don't know how many people come and complain about their partner. It to me, and I'm a monk. I often say, why complain about me? I've never been married. That's why I'm so happy. Ah, I love that kid. But you've got to solve the problems, you think outside the box, as they often say. Because we're monks, we do think outside the box. We live outside the box. So anyway, the only person who shouldn't think outside the box is a cartoon I've got over in Perth. It's on my desk, about this guy talking to his cat. And the cat was they're like cats, still looking at you. And the guy was about to go to work, and the cat was right next to his litter box. He said, don't ever think outside the box. Do your business inside the box, you dirty cat. But anyway, so I'll just check and they're not here, because sometimes she comes to the talks. Anyway, two Thai girls, the two sisters. You don't believe these stories. These stories actually happened. They came to see me for some counseling or something. I often say the only reason they come to see monks for counseling, you know why? Because it's cheap. We don't charge anything. Give us a cup of tea and you can talk to us for an hour. Really good value for money. But anyway, the two sisters came up, and the first one having problem with her husband. They'd been married. Really a lot of difficulty with him, and just giving all, the encouragement to do this and do that. This is how, maybe some solutions. And then took about half an hour, and her sister was waiting patiently. So once I tried my best for her, then I talked to her sister, what's your problem? And her problem was that, she really wanted someone to share her life with. Really looking for a nice guy, but she'd go out for maybe a couple of weeks or a month and then it would all fall apart. And find another guy and then just with him. It was constant. She could never actually get a long-term relationship. She was actually looking for a husband. And I found a solution. Think outside the box. I said, look, your sisters. Your elder sister's got a husband she doesn't want, and you want one. Swap. To me, being a monk, that was obvious. they didn't get it. Anyway, so sometimes instead of blaming your husband, blaming your wife, sometimes. Instead, we blame our wisdom. If you want to blame anything, don't blame the person. Blame your expectations, what you expected in life. Because the guy's not perfect. But then, I tell this sometimes when people come and they complain about their husband. Oh, doesn't earn enough, doesn't treat you right, comes home late, just wants to watch the football on TV rather than talk to you. And just really grumpy and just, and I said, well, yeah, he's got those faults. Then I asked him, what about her? Yeah, she spends too much, she never really listens, she talks too much, she never gives me some space. I said, well, you're both imperfect. You're a match. That's one of the reasons why that we blame the other person.
But don't go around blaming yourself as well, because that's even just worse. You blame yourself, oh, it's my fault. I shouldn't have done this. Why did I do that? I'm hopeless. I should have worked harder. Why did I, you know, sometimes I think, I have to work really hard now. I'm a monk, 68, I should be retired by now. With all that great education and my hard work, I could be relaxed on all these friends of my age now. They're going on these cruise ships. Me, I can't even afford to go to Rottnest Island. And they go cruising all over the world. And I go, did I? So yeah, did I do that? And sometimes I do travel. I go overseas. What do I go overseas for? Work. Do I have a day off? No, work. If people finally have a day off, they say, oh, Champom, you've got a day off. Can you please come and chant for my business, chant for my deceased grandfather? Can you please come and teach me meditation? Can you talk to my kid? So I don't get days off. So it's one of the reasons why I thought, you know, if ever I did do something really, really bad and I went to jail, I would actually confess straight away, even if I wasn't guilty, because then I can get a nice retreat. 3 months inside prison? Whoa, that's joyful, that's perfect. 3 months in prison, then you can't come and visit me to ask questions about your marriage, about meditation. And if I wanted to do a really solitary retreat, just, you know, punch a prison officer on the nose and you get a month solitary. That's perfect meditation, be really peaceful. But people say solitary is not like that anymore. They call it solitary, but I remember some of the prisoners I used to go and teach and said, no, every day the prison officers and the psychologists and the social worker and the psychiatrist have to visit you. You don't get any peace while you're in solitary, apparently, in the prisons these days. Things have really changed. Not for the... Oh, well, anyway, I shouldn't go there. But there was serious, and to take it much deeper, we're always blaming other people, or we're blaming ourselves. And both are just never going to solve any problems at all. Especially blaming ourselves means I'm hopeless, I can't do this. My arm is too small, I'm never going to be able to find any treasure, anything worthwhile in life. No. There's another solution. And that is that, please excuse me again, I say this very often, about what I do when I do marriage blessings, look in the bride's eye, now you're married, it's not about you anymore, you can't think of yourself, looking at the groom, you're a married man now, you mustn't think of yourself, still looking at the groom, and you mustn't think of her, from this moment on, you're a married man, don't think of your wife from this moment on. Looking at the wife, from now on you must not think of him, your husband. And even these days, I say that, and to people married, and they just still don't get it. And they look at me as if I'm a crazy monk. I suppose I am in a way, but no, really, what's he on about? And of course that's when I say, when you're married, you mustn't think of yourself, you mustn't think of your partner, you must think of us. That third option. So in life, we don't blame anybody. It's all about us. In our Buddhist society, is it the committee's fault? Is it the caretaker's fault? Is it the monk's fault? The nun's fault? When anything goes wrong, it's all about us. It's our fault, it's our solution. If there's a problem with climate change, whose fault is it? It's our fault. If there is economic problems, wars, whose fault is it? Is it sort of the foreign governments? No, it is always us, it's our fault. In other words, when we work together, when we commit that our solution, our world, it has to be our solution, it's amazing just how many innovative ways there is to solve problems. And we all take responsibility rather than blaming somebody else. Governments? Who elected them? I often say that whoever you're thinking about, they were a representative of the people. So sometimes when I look at the people, say in Australia, I look at the leaders, they are sometimes a representative. People are concerned about their income, about money. That's why we elect leaders who promise us things about the economy in the future. They represent us. So to change in governments or changing ideas, we have to change as well. That's the interesting thing. Even a long time ago, I remember Ajahn Chah made a prediction. He used to say that in the future people will run out of paper to make banknotes, and they will run out of metal to make coins. And so, in the future, they will use something very, very common for their currency. They will use little pellets of chicken shit. And you'll go to work, and at the end of the work, you'll be given a big bag of chicken shit, depending on how hard you work, and your bosses will earn the most shit. And you'll go to the bank to deposit and see how much chicken shit you've got in the bank. And the IMF will be the International Manure Fund, and the government will be promising you more shit in the future because they've got these economic plans. And if they do run out of chicken shit, they will just import some over. They'll go into debt from big loaners, and all of your superannuation will be in chicken shit accounts. And you can go on a lot like that. And it's not just being gross, but you know, sometimes what's the difference between a piece of paper and a piece of metal, basically a stone? It's only the value which people ascribe to such stuff. So what is most valuable in your life? So don't blame the world. Let's see if we can think outside the box and put value on different things. Well, no, we did go over to San Francisco last June, July, just before the start of the Range Retreat. And one of the people there was this Indian fellow who started this pay it forward business. And in other words, if you do any service, you give service, that you don't have a fee to be paid. If you went in a taxi, you won't be charged, the meter wouldn't be running. And they say, your fare was paid for by somebody else a long time ago. And if you want to actually to pay for somebody else's fare, you can leave a donation in the box. No fee, but you're paying it forward. And that reminded me so much of just, you know, what Ajahn Chah taught me about if ever I help anybody, because obviously that he helped me a lot. And so when you went up to him to say thank you, expressions of gratitude. Now, Ajahn Chah, you taught me so much about meditation, about life. Thank you. He said, stop it. Don't thank me. Because if I thanked him, the transaction would be over. He'd given to me and I paid him back with gratitude. He said, no. He said, I've helped him so much. No, sorry, he's helped me so much. So he said, you're in debt to me. I'm in debt to my teacher. He said, the only way you can pay off that debt is by helping somebody else. When you help somebody else and they say thank you, say no. You're in debt, so you go and help somebody else. And so that way the gift goes on and on and on without end. It was called paying it forward. It's one of the reasons why we're never charged to come in here. And we're charged to go. Sometimes that's one thing we always thought to make money. Our poor old treasurer was saying today, it's so hard to raise money for this place. So I said, no, we can't have any entrance fees for any of the talks. We can have exit fees if you want to get out. No, we never do stuff like that. But, you know, sometimes we have this wonderful way of paying it forward. If whatever you've got, you gain something, you give something so someone else in the future can also enjoy, you know, the same thing which you've got. So we don't pay back, it's always pay forward, not pay back. Payback is blame and revenge. Paying forward is something more beautiful. Something which is not in the currency of dollars or pounds or chicken shit. It's something much more beautiful. Somebody's helped you and you go out of your way to care for others. So we don't ever use that negative blame and want revenge. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. No. Someone's helped us, so we give to somebody else, not the person who helped us. And that means a different type of economy. An economy not of getting and amassing wealth, but an economy of making wealth for others. Goodness, kindness, karma. So that type of idea is something which resonated with just sometimes how it works in a monastery, how it was working in a Buddhist society, how we learn how to not blame others. It is something which is a mistake, we all take responsibility for it. And we just learn how to move together and use something much more important than. Because whenever there's a problem, it really is amazing just how when people come together, we can find those innovative solutions. A lot of time is sometimes we have to wait for those solutions to emerge. And don't think there's no time. The other story, which I can't resist saying, because it was also a guy walking in a forest and a hole. That was the story of the man who was walking in a forest in a jungle, and a tiger spotted him. And there's two things you should know about a tiger. Number one, they eat you. Now, there's lots of tigers in Thailand, but Ajahn Chah would say, no, they never eat monks, so you don't have to be afraid of tigers in Thailand. And then, because I was, you know, always a bit skeptical, they said, how do you know they don't eat monks? If they did eat a monk, the monk wouldn't be there to actually to say anything, and the tiger wouldn't confess. So how do you know they don't eat monks? So I wasn't convinced at all, but of course they do eat people. And number two, they can run much faster than you can run. So when this tiger spotted this man in the jungle, the man was in big trouble. He ran as fast as he could, but the tiger was running faster. And he was running as fast as he could, and the tiger was almost catching up on him. And so when the man saw a big hole in the jungle, he just jumped in without thinking. And he found that it was a big mistake. You should never just jump in without, you know, consideration. Because it was a well which was dry, and in the bottom of that well was a big black snake. And he saw, there was a tiger above and a snake below. He managed to reach out and grab on to a tree root which was protruding through the side of the well, and it broke his fall. And then he looked up and he saw the tiger hadn't given up. The tiger was leaning over, trying to paw him with his really razor sharp claws. But the man's hand was just too low that the tiger couldn't reach him. But it was still stretching, maybe one more stretch and he might catch him. And with all of the noise, the snake had woken up, and the snake wasn't happy. Are you happy when you're woken up in the middle of your sleep? The snake wasn't happy. So the snake raised its head, opened its hood, trying to strike the man's feet. But the feet were just too high, stretching, just couldn't quite get a toe. And as this was happening, the tiger leaning over, the back haunches of the tiger were rubbing against the tree, making the tree shake. And on a branch of that tree, directly over the middle of the well, was a bee's nest. But don't worry. You know that life is sometimes like that. If one thing goes wrong, everything goes wrong. Have you ever noticed that? But anyway, there's a bee's nest. But the bees, it was too low for the bees to come down. But the honey started to drip. Oh, I forgot also that from a hole in the side of the well, two mice came out. A black mouse and a white mouse. And the black mouse and the white mouse starting chewing at the root, making it thinner and thinner and thinner. And it was only a matter of time, maybe a few more minutes, when that branch would break, that little tree root. And of course, what happened next? That honey started to drip right in the middle of the well. So the man, with the tiger above him, about to catch him, the snake below him, trying to, almost about to bite him, and his hold on safety getting thinner and weaker as the black mouse and the white mouse kept on eating at that tree root. What did he do? He put out his tongue and tasted the honey. Oh, it was so sweet. And that's the end of the story. When I first heard that story, I thought, what a wonderful story that is, because that's life. Isn't it the case that life is like you've got a tiger above you, snake below you, and there's the black mouse and the white mouse, day and night, eating at your precarious hold on your existence, but whatever's happening, there's always some honey dripping somewhere. How delicious. To me, that's a wonderful story of the meaning of life, because it's real. However, you always like to add your own positive solutions. So instead of, you know, it's really big trouble, instead of blaming the things, just relax, enjoy the honey which comes in life. And what might happen next? Well, I thought might happen next, and it could happen, it's logical, it's a possibility. The tiger. You know what happens? Sometimes we just stretch ourselves a bit too far. Because of desires, wanting to eat that man, sometimes you forget about what you're doing in your back feet. He leant over a little bit too far, lost his balance, and the tiger fell into the well. Fortunately, he just missed the guy, but he fell right on top of the snake, crushed the snake and broke his own neck. So with the tiger and the snake both dead, the man could very calmly, at his leisure, just climb out of the well and go home. Why not? It could happen. And that's one of the most wonderful things about life. Sometimes you really think you're in a terrible place and you want to blame others. But if you just wait and hold on there, it's amazing how sometimes the situation changes unexpectedly, which is one of the reasons why we always say, if there's nothing to do, do nothing and wait and enjoy the honey, which is always dripping from somewhere. And then when things change, it's amazing. You realize, wow, if I was blaming, getting negative, I couldn't see, could never see the honey of life. So little by little, we learn, instead of blaming, other selves or saying other or blaming others. There's always something you can do. Sometimes we always think, why me? Do you always think bad things happen to you? Why you? And of course the answer is, why not? Well, life is so unfair. Is it? And this was the old story of this fellow who was in prison for something he didn't do. Imagine being put in jail for a crime you don't commit. And this poor gentleman, he was over at Carnap Prison Farm, and I used to go and see him, and he came up to me one evening, and he said, when I was visiting there, and he said, look, Ajahn Brahm, sort of, I respect you, and, I'm trying to change my life, trying to be a good person, keeping my precepts. He said, I won't lie to you. He said, I won't lie. I know other prisoners will all say they're innocent, they didn't do it, but I didn't do that crime. I didn't do that robbery. I've been put in jail for something I never did. And I've got a social conscience. You can't just let that happen to a poor person. Put in jail for a few years for a crime he didn't commit. And I also know that, your ability to get a lawyer or just to call for help is so limited inside prison. So I thought, I know people. Maybe I can take that cause up. Maybe I can sort of fight for his release from jail for a crime he never committed. But as I was thinking like that, this scallywag of a prisoner, he looked at me and he broke into this, almost like a few teeth missing smile. And he said, but Ajahn Brahm, it's true, I never did that crime. I never did that robbery. But he said, since listening to you and learning about the law of karma, there's so many other robberies which I got away with where I wasn't caught. I guess this is fair. So how many times do you get flashed by a speed camera and you complain, oh, why did this happen? It's really unfair. But how many times are you speeding and there's no speed camera there? Do you say, oh, this is unfair? I was speeding and I wasn't caught. Do you ever say that? So sometimes, if you look at life in a positive way, maybe it is fair sometimes. Maybe it's a balancing. Maybe it's giving you the opportunity to learn something of life. And to me, that instead of blaming, if anything happens to me, I think, wow, it's an opportunity that I can learn something and grow some more. So everything which has ever happened to me in life, when I first came here, people were asking today how long I've been here, 36 years, almost 37 years now, coming up in Perth. And I had all my plans, my life was going to evolve. Because I was number two monk. I never wanted to be the head monk. The head monk was Ajahn Chakwa. I saw how much work he had to do. The head monk is always the one, it's like the head car in a convoy. You're the one who takes all the bugs on the windscreen. Those who are tailgating, coming behind you, they don't have to work so hard and they have a much easier life. So it's much harder being out front. But the only reason, I was having a wonderful time. Even now, somebody was asking about, if Ajahn Brahm dies, who's going to take over? They won't let me die. They're scared of taking over. Even now, I was in Penang. When that Boxing Day tsunami hit, I was actually in Penang that day. Even though it was another part of the island which was safe. But a couple of people died in Penang when the tsunami hit. And my second monk at the time, if you remember him, Ajahn Chattamala, apparently as soon as he heard I was in one of the disaster zones and the tsunami hit, he was calling everybody as much as he possibly could to try make sure I was safe. And when I found that out, I said, I didn't realize you cared about me so much. And he was honest enough. He said, well, I wasn't really caring about you, but I knew that if you died, I'd have to take over. That's what I was worried about. It's a tough job. But anyway, just the other monk who was senior to me, he got married, and so he had to leave. So he left me at the front. But anyway, I always thought that even though it's not planned in life, instead of blaming anybody, you learn how to make it work. And my idea was, if I could, inspire people, give good talks and show good leadership, wonderful. But if I didn't, that'd be even better. Then I could be a hermit. So you know how it worked out. Sometimes I think maybe I should have just deliberately given worse talks. Maybe deliberately trying to... Actually, I did try this, to tell bad jokes. But to my surprise, people wanted to hear them again and again and again. People are crazy with these jokes. Oh, what's that other joke which I was saying earlier today about... You know when you go... people who go to present on a stage, or especially they go to act in a theatre, they always tell the people before they go to stage to break a leg. You know where that comes from? They say break a leg because they want to get in the cast. Okay, typical gross. But you know what I found? When I tell a bad joke like that, people go and share it with their friends. So you grow now, but you remember that and tell others. Anyway, so back to, where was I? Back to actually complaining. No, instead of complaining, why me? Always use everything as an opportunity. An opportunity to actually to grow. So sometimes, even when there's like a breakup of a relationship, please don't blame yourself, don't blame your partner. Even relationships have use-by dates. Just like milk, keep it too long and it's too hot, it goes sour. Butter goes rancid. Just things go off after a while. Sometimes they last a long time, but sometimes it's nobody's fault. So don't blame yourself, don't blame others, don't blame life. Everything which happens to you in life is, you can always find some meaning there somewhere. You have an accident and things happen to you that... I first learned this when we were with the cancer patients. I don't know, it really shocked me at first when people who had been through the cancer had said, that was the best thing which happened to me. I couldn't understand that, not having gone through such a serious disease, which takes a long time to recover from. Why did they actually say that, the best thing which happened to me? It wasn't pleasant, but they certainly learned about the value of life and what's really important. Whereas before, that they were a bit, you might say, negligent. They didn't really need to consider just the importance of family and friends, quality of life rather than quantity of money in the bank. It did change a lot of the way people looked at life, which they said that's why it was the best thing which ever happened to them. Weird, isn't it? And that's why sometimes when things go wrong in life, at the time you can't really see just its meaning for you. But after a while, you see wonderful, that's a wonderful thing which happened. If it wasn't for that, maybe I would have lost out so much wisdom and understanding about what life really is. Deaths of people in your family, you learn so much from that, to be able to love them when they're here and to let go, to love them so much to learn how to let them go. There's so much which life you can learn from instead of complaining and blaming. So, I've gone on for such a long time. If I go on for any longer, you'll be blaming me. So thank you for listening this evening about no blame. Sadhu. Okay, any questions from overseas or from the floor? Or from the seats as well? We have some from here. The machine. Here we go. From USA, from USA, from USA. My goodness. Why do people who blame others, tell lies and fabricate stories about innocent victims seem to always win? Is that the true nature of this world? Not really. The people who blame others tell lies and fabricate stories about innocent victims. Sometimes, well, actually quite often, there is something which is called guilt, remorse, people with conscience. And sometimes people say, no, there are some people called psychopaths who have no conscience at all, no feelings for others. But I don't agree with that, because I've seen some people labeled really clinical psychopaths in prisons, people who have just murdered crazily. And what I've found is just after a little while, when they open up to you, when they trust you, when they don't start talking, they let down their facade. They're not really concerned about protecting their tough person image. Then they all tell me, I never met one who hasn't said they are very, wish they could have the time back again so they never did that, they made a different choice in life. They all regret it. I never met one who doesn't have that sense of guilt and remorse. So people who blame others, who fabricate stories, it's just trying to protect their own narrative of what happened, because they know the truth and they're afraid of admitting that truth. They don't win at all, not in my experience. On the outside you may think they're winners, but on the inside they usually have to rely on alcohol and drugs to escape the reality of their own pain. How can I maintain equanimity when I see others in society, politics, blaming each other and making things worse? How can I contribute towards peace and effective solutions in this situation? You know, there was a time when we used to call politicians the honourable member for this or the honourable member for that. And even, but these days, that do many of our politicians deserve such a label of honourable? Sometimes that our politicians would have arguments, but they would always do so in a, basically in a civilized way. And so blaming other people, of course, is just wasting a lot of valuable time. And you may have seen this one before, but when you point the finger at somebody else, 3 fingers are pointing at you. It's an old sort of stuff. It means if you're blaming others, you know, you're actually revealing just a lot of your own inadequacies and failures. So, when people in society blame others for making things worse, it does make things worse. In order to be able to move forward in life, we have to move forward together. Otherwise, that spending too much time blaming. However, every now and again, our governments, our communities do wonderful things. But we don't praise enough, we don't commend enough the good things which get done. They never get on the newspapers. And if we actually praise one another about some of the wonderful things which we achieve in this world, and there are many such things, we give more oxygen to successes and harmony than we do to divisions and lies and fighting, then maybe that will be encouraged, because it gets more airtime, it gets more exposure, and people see that that's what they want to be part of, rather than be part. The only way to get on the news these days is if you're a mass murderer or do something wrong or light a fire. Why can't we put on more news for people who stop fires, the people who do find solutions? I'm a special education teacher, and some of my students misbehave. Instead of blaming and punishing them, what can I do? Is misbehave that sometimes that's what are the boundaries you set on what's misbehavior? Do you expect too much of them? They're special education teachers, special needs. Do they realize that they're harming others or harming you? Their behavior may not be according to some standards, but that's the best they can do to protect them or protect others. But maybe we can even change some of our expectations of what is misbehavior and what is expressing some other part of themselves which is not being acknowledged and recognized. Sometimes people do sometimes misbehavior to get attention, to somehow find out there's some big problem somewhere. So if we can attend to that, maybe we won't call it misbehavior. Maybe it's just a way which we misinterpret as misbehavior. However, of course, that the resources needed for people who have special needs is tiring for us, and it's also, what is it? It takes more resources, but often it's really worthwhile. Special education, I'm not quite sure what particular type of special education, but I think everyone needs special education in the sense that everyone individual, and to accommodate people who are different, not disabled, but different with different needs and different ways of expressing themselves, and also just to be able to make sure they don't feel so frustrated that they're misunderstood, will actually solve a lot of the problems. It takes a lot of resources, a lot of time. But I see this happening in many, many places. People who are attention deficit disorder, autism spectrum disorder, people who are have other sort of learning difficulties, dyslexia, whether it's word dyslexia or number dyslexia. All of these things that sometimes, that if they are deficient in one area, somehow nature compensates them with amazing abilities in other areas. I was just reading in one of the articles on the ABC website about this fellow who had dyslexia, was not really understood, digital and letter dyslexia, verbal language dyslexia. But he was an incredible artist, and apparently that his artwork was something which he excelled in at the expense of other parts of his so-called education. And he had a wonderful life as one of the famous Australian artists. So sometimes the special education teachers, sometimes discovering those aspects, those talents of your students, and see if you can bring them out so they don't need to misbehave anymore, and they actually contribute to the harmony and richness of our society rather than being looked upon as one more problem. Anyway, I'm just guessing there because I don't know the situation totally which you are referring to. So anyway, there we go for the talk this evening. Any questions from the floor? Great. Because it is a warm evening, and because my brain was made in England, and it just sometimes just gets a bit fuddled when it gets this time of night and it's warm, it might be a good time to say good night. So let's say goodbye to the Buddha. Pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha first. Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhaṃ Bhagavantaṃ Abhivādin Suvākkato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammaṃ Namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namami.
Yeah.